Here we are as a people, having experienced political domination, economic exploitation, segregation, and humiliation for well now 344 years, and yet the demands of history make it necessary for us to be as productive and as responsible as the people who never had these experiences. This is our dilemma.
In 1960s America, a young boy, Elwood, listens to a record of Martin Luther King's speeches on repeat. The Reverend's words enrage and inspire him, shedding a light on the racial injustices of the past and present, and giving him hope for a better future. Elwood is bright and honest, as good as anyone. But when a miscarriage of justice sends him to a violent, segregated reform school, his optimism and innocence could be shattered. The Nickel Boys is a devastating and wonderful new novel by Colson Whitehead, who won the Pulitzer Prize for his 2016 hit, The Underground Railroad. Colson Whitehead, welcome to the book show.
Hey, how do you do?
So this story, Colson, is based on a real school, the Dozier School in Florida. What kind of children were sent to Dozier?
It was a reform school. It opened in 1900. January 1st, so it was the first day of the new century. And the idea was that you had juvenile offenders, and instead of locking them up with adult criminals where they might, you know, become worse, you would give them an education, you would have them do field work, and hopefully instill some values. And then over time, they started adding to the teenage mix orphans and wards of the state. People had nowhere else to go, and they'd send them there for terms of about 18 months.
And you say it was a school that was meant to educate and reform them, but it seems like this school wasn't necessarily interested in that.
No, I mean, they had, you know, they had school 3 days a week and then farm work. But in, you know, in situations where there's not a lot of supervision, the government doesn't really look after its charges. There's a great chance for abuse. And so there was physical abuse, whippings, there was sexual abuse. And even some of the kids ended up dead. When they finally closed the school in 2011 and they started to excavate the site, they found a hidden graveyard of unmarked graves. And there were boys who had suffered head trauma, boys who had shotgun pellets in their rib cages. And some of the adult survivors, people who'd been there in the 50s and 60s and 70s, started coming forward to tell their story of what happened there.
A lot of them told their story to the Tampa Bay Times in Florida, and it wrote a number of articles, one of which said the boys went in damaged and came out destroyed. That's such a powerful observation, isn't it?
Well, yeah, you get sent there for being a juvenile delinquent or not going to school, you know, for stealing a newspaper or cursing at your teacher. And so for very minor offenses, you'd be sent there and then end up in a much more terrible situation. And then, of course, once you're out, how do you make a life? How do you enter a normal society? Can you do that? Have you been so damaged? And so, you know, the Nickel Boys, my version, you know, follows the kids there in 63 and then follows one kid as he, you know, tries to make a life later.
Can you tell me about the White House, which was at Dozier School and also appears in your novel?
It was a real place. It was a utility shed on the campus. And once there was one investigation, and they stopped corporal punishment, which meant they just relocated it. So they turned the utility shed into a whipping room, and boys would be told to lay down on a cot. They would get, you know, dozens of lashings with a leather belt, sometimes so severely that their jeans would be embedded in their skin, and the doctors at the infirmary would have to pick out the fibers with tweezers. And to cover the sounds, we're getting grim here. I apologize. But to cover the sounds of the beatings, they had a big industrial fan, and so whenever the kids heard the industrial fan turning on, and it's whirring, they knew that something bad was happening.
Yeah, it is. It is really awful to hear about, Colson. I mean, you've done so much research into this and decided to write a book about it. What's it been like to sit with this research and this understanding of what happened at this place?
I've never had such a personal reaction. Definitely the last couple of weeks of work, I was very depressed, you know, bringing my story to a conclusion. I took the situation of Dozier, made my own school, the Nickel Academy, and made up characters, but, you know, their experiences are drawn from survivor stories and memoirs. And, I just felt very worn out those last couple of weeks.
I believe you. What made you want to tell this story?
It was the summer of 2014 when I first heard about it, and that's when they were bringing up the bodies and excavating the site. And it was a summer of a lot of racial unrest in America. Michael Brown, a teenager, was shot by a white policeman in Ferguson, Missouri, unarmed. Eric Garner was selling illegal cigarettes on the street, was put in a chokehold by white policemen and died. And, you know, there are a lot of articles about the very low rates of prosecution for murders of black unarmed black people by policemen. And it just seemed no one was ever held accountable. People perpetrate crimes, get away with it, and the innocent suffer. And then I came across the story of Dozier that August, and it seemed horrible in its details. It seemed horrible that I had never heard of the place. And, you know, if there's one place, there's dozens and dozens. And so it seemed it spoke to a larger depravity in the culture.
Yeah, because it is important to note that at this school, even the treatment and the punishment of the students at this school was segregated, right?
Yeah. Until the late 60s, like a lot of the South, this institution was segregated. So there was a white campus, there was a black campus. And when the story started coming out, 8 years ago, a lot of the survivors were white. And I wondered what was the story of the black part of the campus. They were the majority of the students there, but a lot of the survivors who came forward were white. And so it just seemed, you know, invited the question of what was it like on the northern campus.
And were you able to find that out?
Yeah, I mean, that's the story of my book, and it takes a situation and then I let my imagination devise characters to put in there.
Well, I'd love to talk about these characters because they're wonderful characters. We first meet Elwood. He's described by a friend as a sturdy boy. What does that mean?
It means a lot of different things, but he's a great student. He's grown up in his teenage years watching Martin Luther King and civil rights protesters marching, getting things done, changing the world. And so he's grown up, you know, in a very formative time where he believes that he can affect change, that there have been centuries of racial injustice, but there's a new generation coming up and winning the fight, and he sees himself in that camp. He gets, you know, he hitches a ride in a stolen car and gets sent to the Nickel Academy, and he doesn't know the driver, just in the wrong place, wrong time. And that's where he meets Turner, who's sort of his opposite number. Turner's an orphan, and he's been living by his wits, institutions, on the street. And, you know, he sees the world as it actually is. It's not Elwood's vision. It's brutal and merciless. And the best you can do is sort of get by. And so they have these two philosophies. And, you know, the heart of the book is basically a debate between Elwood and Turner about how best to live in the world, or how can you live in the world.
Yeah, the contrast between the boys, the cynicism of Turner compared to the idealism of Elwood is so wonderful. But you do worry for Elwood about how he can maintain those ideals and that optimism when this school is so determined to literally beat it out of him.
I mean, that's the dilemma of any you know, group that's being persecuted, denied their rights. How did Martin Luther King march knowing that people with fire hoses and bats and guns were waiting to greet him and, you know, the rest of his crew? The kind of courage that it takes to do what Martin Luther King did is, you know, sort of beyond my imagining. And that's what Elwood has. He has this hope and this drive that things can get better.
He is so inspired by the speeches of Martin Luther King. And we get to hear some of those through the book. Were you listening to these while you were writing?
I made a decision about his age and what time period, and then who would he listen to, Malcolm X or Martin Luther King? Martin Luther King was more likely, and so I had to figure out the right speeches that were delivered at the right time. And so it was really inspiring for me to go back to hear King speak after, you know, for so long. And, you know, I was sort of caught up in the way Elwood was. I mean, how could this person exist? And how can someone so eloquent be on the earth and do the great things he did? And so in studying Martin Luther King, I actually ended up understanding Elwood more.
I've been listening to some of those recordings while working on this interview, and I just am blown away by what a speechmaker the man was.
And, you know, and of course, he had to be getting, you know, taken rid of, you know, they had to take care of him and get rid of him. That's what we do with our great figures, Martin Luther King or JFK, people who, in their various ways, are going to upend the old order. They have to be dealt with, unfortunately, you know, in the eyes of the establishment. And Elwood, in his optimism and his drive to effect change, has to be, you know, taught some lessons once he gets to Nickel Academy.
We can't say too much about what happens to Elwood and Turner while they're at the Nickel Academy, but the book does move into their future towards the end, and it seems very clear that what happened to them at this really awful, violent school stays with them. I mean, what kind of impact does a school like the Nickel Academy, a school like the Real Dozier, have on these boys as they become men?
Well, you've been beaten, sexually abused, and that's not the experience of everyone who goes to Dozier, but how do you make a life? How do you make a family? Do you fall into addiction? Do you fall into a deeper criminal pattern? Can you be happy? And so, you know, we pick up Elwood's story in New York in the 70s and the 80s as he, you know, the ripple effect of his time at Dozier affects him. And that's part of the story. How do you, once you get out, how do you reenter society?
Were you able to find some hope in this story despite the awful things that had happened?
Well, I think it sort of goes around to what we were sort of discussing just now. You can make it out. You can make a life. What percentage? At what cost? And anybody who suffered a deeply traumatic event in their personal life, in their society, has to figure out a way to live. You know, do you fall into despair, or do you find a way to, you know, find your place in the world? And that's, you know, I think common for anybody who's, you know, suffered a big traumatic event. And then particularly in a place like Dozier, if you're one of the kids who gets the worst of it, 20 years later, 30 years later, 40 years later, how far can you run from that place? And what can you make for yourself?
Colson Whitehead, you won the Pulitzer Prize for the Underground Railroad in 2016. This is your follow-up novel. How do you follow up a Pulitzer Prize win? Is there pressure on you to live up to that book in your writing?
Not internally. Yeah, I don't know what about other people. You know, people ask, is it hard? You know, it's always hard. You know, this book is hard because you're depressed. This book is hard because you're broke. You have young kids. You've gone through a life change. I mean, the work never gets really easy if you're putting the real effort in. So I just did what I usually do, you know, trying to find a story that I find compelling and not screwed up page by page. And then obviously the Underground Railroad was a sort of once-in-a-lifetime success. And I've had books that have failed and books that have succeeded, you know, failed in different ways. And once you're done talking about it, you're done touring, it's just you and the page again. So I'm used to that, the challenge of a new book. And it's, you know, for me it was the same after book eight as it was with book one.
Well, I think this book is certainly marvelous. Colson Whitehead, congratulations on this.
Oh, thanks so much. And I look forward to heading by your way to meet some folks and talk about the book.
Fantastic. I really do recommend this book, The Nickel Boys by Colson Whitehead, is published by Fleet.